Brown Maine calling for the love of horror movies. What are the movies Cujo, Carrie, House of Dark Shadows, Pet Sematary, and Salem's Lot all have in common? Yes, all but one were written by Stephen King, but also all are set in Maine, and that is just the beginning of a very long list. Why Maine? Is it really that creepy here? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we bravely tiptoe into the world of scary movies, those with foggy graveyards, creaky staircases, boogeymen around each corner or under the bed, possessed pets, and the undead. The genre is really popular right now, especially among young adults. Why? Share your favorites or which characters give you nightmares. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Do you like being scared when you watch a movie? Apparently a lot of people do. Horror films are the fastest growing movie genre today. So today, because it's Halloween, and as part of our Passions and Pastimes series, we are talking about horror movies and why people love them. My guests are Aviva Briefel, who is a professor of English and Cinema Studies at Bowdoin College and co-editor of Horror After 9/11, World of Fear, Cinema of Terror. Alan Baldwin, who is a filmmaker and co-founder of Damnation Land, a horror-themed filmmaker showcase. And also with me, my colleague, Jane Donahue. You may recognize her name. She's a Maine Public Radio operations announcer and producer, and she is a horror movie enthusiast and the reason we are doing this program today. We invite you to join the conversation. If you are a fan of horror films, let us know why. Let us know what your favorite horror movie is. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. And Jane, I have to start by saying that you are a person that I would not suspect would be a horror movie film. You are now sitting here in a black T-shirt with a movie theme, but the Jane Donahue that I know is kind and gentle and thoughtful and positive, and I need you to explain this.
I mean, I think that might be the case for a lot of people who like horror movies. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's part of it. There's something a little cathartic about it, mm-hmm. maybe, after you are sort of going through your day very, very normally and very positively, to then come home and dive into something kind of twisted. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it's a fun deviation from kind of my everyday.
Okay, so if I went to your place, there's not like a secret dungeon full of, you know.
There's not. There is an attic, though. And who knows? Who knows what's up there?
Who knows what's up there?
Yeah.
Alan, are
I'm
you?
I'm not up there.
Are you in the same sort of, would you describe your personality as split, would you say? You're one person when you're engaged in your filmmaking or horror movie watching, and another person, you know, walking in and getting a cup of coffee at the local
Interesting. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, really. I think when we're talking about horror films, we're just talking about looking at some dark things within all of ourselves, right? So it's more about, I think, just being willing to be challenged a little bit by something, or look at the sort of like dark underbelly of what we do as humans. You know, I think I think it's sort of a healthy thing in a weird way.
A healthy thing.
Yeah, to like take a look at some of this stuff.
Aviva, you're nodding. You think it's healthy as well?
I do. I mean, I have loved horror for a long time, and I love teaching about horror. And I do think it's a way to think about our world through a kind of different lens, to think about what's going on politically or what's going on culturally. There's often a kind of translation work that horror does through fear, through these images of the supernatural, et cetera, that allows us to really process things that we might not be able to process in our everyday lives. So I would agree with Alan on that.
All right. So Aviva, part of the big debate, isn't it, is what is a horror film? So some people think that Jaws is a horror film, and some people think it's not. What do you say?
So for me, I tend to think about horror as a kind of film that, you know, produces fear. Obviously, horror is one of the only genres that actually is named after the response it provokes in audiences, right? And for me, it also has to feature some kind of monstrous figure. So for me, Jaws would be a horror film. I mean, it could also be characterized as a thriller or as a, but because there is this kind of central monster, or in some cases, more than one monster, that for me is what characterizes horror as opposed to other kinds of scary genres.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask you, because you're sitting in your office at Bowdoin and I see over your shoulder a poster of Get Out. Who is the monster in Get Out?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Jordan Peele's, I think, film points to white supremacy as a monster, right? So it's interesting because he really keeps you guessing about who the monster is. And there are some twists there about who in particular becomes a monstrous figure. Mm-hmm. But in general, he's making a kind of commentary on society, on white privilege, on supremacy, on racism. And so it becomes a kind of societal monster, but because he addresses that through conventions of horror, fear, science fiction, then for me, it becomes much more of a kind of horror monstrosity than, like, let's say something like 12 Years a Slave, which has a realism to it, right? A historical truth to it.
So is that one of the keys, that there has to be something unrealistic about it?
Something unrealistic or implausible, right? It's not to say that it can, like Silence of the Lambs, we were talking about before we started, right? Serial killers are a real phenomenon. But there's something about how these figures are presented through film in often larger than life ways that, like, flirt with the implausible.
Okay, so Jane, I want to turn to you and ask you, when you're looking for a horror film to watch, are you looking for something that's gory? Are you looking for something that you're going to think about a lot afterwards? Are you thinking about something that's going to make you scream? Like, what is it that you is a really ideal horror film for you?
For me, so my friends and I are all big horror movie fans, and the distinction that we always draw, that we were talking about before we started, is I feel like there are horror movies that scare you, and there are jump scares, and maybe there's some gore, and then there are horror movies that make you feel bad, and they, you know, no one is jumping out with a knife, and maybe you're not getting, like, a very dramatic blood splatter, but you leave with kind of a feeling of heaviness. That is the kind of horror movie that I like. I like a slow burn and something like my shirt. I'm wearing a Hereditary t-shirt. And to me, the scariest part of Hereditary is the interpersonal family drama and the resentment and the grief. And those are all very, very real things. It's not, you can leave the theater from that movie and say, okay, a sort of demonic cult to a prince of hell, that's not real, but grief and resentment of your family and, you know, what your family has made you become, those are real things. And that is, I think, much scarier than, you know, the kind of decapitations or the rituals that you see in the movie. That's my favorite kind of horror movie.
What about you, Alan?
I totally agree. We were talking about Ari Aster before, and, like, I think Midsommar is another great example of, like, you're not even really sure it's a horror movie until then in the end it's very clearly a horror movie. But we were also talking about I Saw the TV Glow, which I think is, again, like, that movie has a creep factor to it. There's something wrong in that movie the whole time. But I guess I'm not sure if I would call it a horror movie, but it definitely has this like lingering dread about, you know, being a young queer teenager, that is very much, it feels horrific. And it's very surreal too, right? It has that element too. So I do, I definitely prefer the longer, slower burns. Michael Haneke, Funny Games, his original Funny Games. Boy, that one, long, long creep, but very, very frightening.
Okay, Aviva, what about you? Slow burn or?
Slow burn, dread, slow burn. One of my favorite films, even though I'm not a fan of the director, is Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby. And for me, that is, I'm a New Yorker originally. I haven't always lived in Maine. And it's so much a film about New York and also about not knowing who's living in the apartment next door. It's a film that's about the possible dread of pregnancy for those who've experienced it, the kinds of paranoias that emerge for women in certain contexts. And it really is just such a kind of a film that really leaves you guessing until the end. But in every frame, in every moment, there's just this sense of weight, of weightiness, and of just, you know, just this sense of horror, but not, again, there's very little gore in the film. But it really makes you think that you are being watched and that you're watching something that you're not really supposed to be watching. And sometimes that can occur with gore. Like, I think recently, the Philippou brothers, whose films are very gory, Bring Her Back and Talk to Me are two films that came out in the last few years, which are very explicitly gory, but they also have that weight of grief, of loss, of melancholy, of all of these different things that we feel on a daily basis that to me are almost more overwhelming in watching those films than the blood and the kind of gore that, you know, we associate with horror.
Okay. Aviva, my 24-year-old daughter loves horror films. Jane, I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but I think you're the same range of age. Have you noticed, Aviva, a trend that that there really is something going on now, that 20-somethings love horror films?
Yeah, I think so. And I have been teaching horror for a while here at Bowdoin, and there's always been an interest in the genre. But right now, what I think younger people and also not so young people are getting is the sense that horror has become so mainstream, right? Like the big, like you said at the beginning, the really big films now include horror films like Sinners recently, the new Frankenstein, which I haven't seen yet. But so there is that sense that it's very much front and center in culture right now, and on the big screen and on the small screen. And so I think that's the difference now, that there is a kind of identification with horror and a recognition of horror as an important mode of storytelling.
You see that in the Oscars, right? Like Parasite and Substance, like.
Okay, so I have to ask you, I saw those, Parasite and Substance. You consider those both horror films, Alan?
Oh my goodness, The Substance is definitely a horror film.
Okay, all right.
I think Parasite is maybe, I think of it as the same, in the same space. It's like there's a creepiness to it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, who's living in your house? I think that's, I definitely consider that a horror movie, but it may be, and the filmmaker dabbles in a lot of stuff, but he definitely has done horror work as well. So maybe that's why I think of it as horror, but I don't know if you guys think that is.
So Jane, I want to ask you though, why you think, what is it about your generation likes horror films so much? Is it because there's some really big blockbuster films that could be categorized as horror, or is it because of what you've lived through, your generation, what you faced, your post 9/11, a lot of you I know are really concerned about the climate. You've grown up with school shootings, the pandemic. Do you think it's sort of a reaction to, or am I overthinking this?
No, I mean, I feel like horror has always been a reaction to cultural fears. Mm-hmm. And I think that especially growing up especially post 9/11, that sense of fear has kind of permeated everyday life for people my age. I think also the sort of sense of surveillance is also pretty prominent with social media and cell phones. But I also think part of it is these really like canny studios like A24 and Neon that bring on these like auteur directors like Robert Eggers, like Ari Aster. And like A24 kind of came to the fore through their marketing. When they released The Witch in 2015, they held this like very ornate premiere screening that was kind of like a witch's Sabbath theme. And A24 now carries like a lot of cultural cachet. You'll see a lot of young people with A24 like hats or dog leashes even. They do all of these really ornate merch drops like the shirt I'm wearing. So I think it's probably a combination of the kind of cultural fears and the, yeah, pretty scary world, I think, that we have grown up in. I feel like a sense of stability has never really felt guaranteed for people my age. So I think it's partly that, and I think it's also these studios and these directors who see a kind of new direction to take with horror and are doing that in ways that really appeal to young people and are really exciting to young people.
And Aviva, I should ask you, like, throughout film history, are different kinds of horror films in style in different decades? You know, what the 20-somethings like today, is it the same thing that the 20-somethings liked in the 1950s? Or are there different styles that come in and out of vogue?
Definitely different styles. And I think that one of the things we see, there's a, I can't remember who said this initially, but that every era has the monster it deserves, that there's a certain kind of reflection of cultural trends and fears through horror, whether in the 50s, it's kind of like the sci-fi invasion, Cold War anxieties. In the 80s, we see a real suspicion and fear even of the nuclear family and the suburbs. And now, really, there's a kind of variety of issues that are being brought up, but definitely questions of racial inequity with Jordan Peele, but also of again, a return to thinking about the family as a fraught space, potentially, like with Ari Aster's films and others as well. So I do think that it changes. I think one of my students made a really good point the other day that one of the things that has maybe changed now is that horror films tend to not be categorized immediately as horror these days. So in other words, we were talking about The Substance or Parasite, or they're really foregrounding other issues very self-consciously, even Sinners, right? So it really is putting itself as a genre that works well with others, whether it's comedy or whether it's melodrama or whether it's, you know, different kinds of dramas. So I find that really interesting.
Well, we are talking about horror films on Maine Calling, and yes, it is Halloween. If you haven't checked your calendar, what are your favorite horror films? Do you love them or not so much? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Did you recognize that little bit of theme music? That was from The Exorcist. Today we are talking about horror films. What goes into horror films that makes them so compelling? Joining me, Maine Public's very own Jane Donahue, who is one of our radio operations producers and announcers. You heard her voice during that break. She is a horror film fan. Aviva Briefel is a Bowdoin College professor of English and Cinema Studies. And Alan Baldwin is a filmmaker who co-founded Damnation Land. We invite you to join the conversation. What is the scariest movie you've ever seen? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Alan, Damnation Land was last night at the State Theater in Portland. How did it go?
It was great. Despite the rain, we had, I think we had around 600 people at the State Theater. We're doing more screenings. The Magic Lantern in Bridgeton is doing a screening tonight, and I think another one later this weekend. And we're also doing we have 108 total films over 15 years. So we're doing a archive screening at Mayo Street Arts all weekend. So like 18 hours of Damnation Land at Mayo Street.
And so people can find out more about it at?
DamnationLand.com. And then Mayo Street Arts is where we're doing the archive screening right here in Portland.
All right. Well, Aviva, we're going to go to calls in just a second, but we have made it this far into the program without talking about Stephen King. And, you know, you can't talk about horror films without talking about Stephen King. And I'm trying to figure out, is the reason that so many horror films are set in Maine because of him or because Maine is creepy? What is your analysis, Aviva?
I would say both. You know, as somebody who grew up in cities, like when I moved to Maine, I was like, well, this is different. Like there's a lot of obviously nature and there aren't as many people around. Like I'm not talking about Portland. So I think there's something mysterious about that that really provides a really interesting setting for horror. Maine also has a deep history, and horror is almost always about some kind of history that's either been repressed or forgotten. Mm-hmm. And I do think Stephen King is a huge part of that as well, because he really mapped the Maine landscape into, in part, a landscape of horror. And that's part of what's so interesting now to me, that I've lived in Maine for a long time, reading his books or watching adaptations of this kind of Maine recreation of a Gothic Maine is really fascinating to me. And I think he has a big part in that.
Jane, what's your take on Stephen King and Maine as a center for horror films?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's a very ripe setting for horror because so much of it is rural. And so you're out, you know, in a countryside home and there's no one for miles. That's a perfect setting for a scary story. There's a lot of history. You have these very like dramatic pine forests and a very rugged coastline. I also think there's just kind of something about the affect of Mainers that kind of lends itself to horror. I remember I saw John Mulaney at the State Theater a couple of years ago, and he said Mainers act like when you sort of first introduce yourself to them, they act like they have just finished hiding a body. he was like, there's just some, because, you know, you kind of go up to them and they seem a little suspicious of like, why are you talking to me? You know, they're a little on edge. And so I think there is something about that New England reservedness that kind of lends itself to, you know, if you're in a scary situation, you don't know who you can trust. You don't know who's going to be willing to lend you some help. So I think there's maybe a little bit of that as well.
And as a filmmaker, Alan, is it the fog? Is it the days like today where it's going to be Halloween tonight and there's going to be wind blowing? And
I don't know. I mean, Maine's a great place to shoot film for sure. Like it always looks great. I think, you know, it is also, you know, it's the dark edge of New England. It's got that sort of, yeah, puritanical history. I mean, Maine's been a place for artists for, you know, hundreds of years. And even like, you know, I remember class I took at Bowdoin College, actually, with Ann Kibbe, about the American Gothic. And like, we read a lot of early, like, New England work set in Maine. And it was, it's got this dark, puritanical, like, we're still dealing with that early colonialism stuff. It's really fascinating.
We're going to go to some of those calls. Michael's calling from Bangor. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hello. Happy Halloween.
You too.
Yeah, Stephen King is definitely a fright at the movies. I went to a film school, and it was essentially a horror film school. We, for 4 years and plus, we dominated the horror movie fans and makers. It was fun.
Yeah, and Michael, do you have a favorite or a favorite type of horror film?
I didn't see Psycho until college, and we studied Hitchcock a lot. I'm a big fan of suspense thrillers, you know, meticulously calculated scenarios emerging into, I guess you were saying earlier, the slow burn.
Okay. Yeah. I mentioned earlier that we had gotten that far in the show without mentioning Stephen King, but we had also not mentioned Hitchcock, Aviva. Tell us about Hitchcock's influence on films today.
Yeah, well, many people consider Psycho, which was released in 1960, as the first slasher film, right? I mean, everyone remembers who's seen it, the shower scene and the kind of, paranoia around taking showers. And I always start my film classes with that film, even though we focus a lot on more contemporary films, because so many of the images of horror that Hitchcock introduced in that film just reappear in different forms in films dating until now, right? In terms of, and I think it's a fascinating film, and that's another example of a film that really is horror because it features a monstrous figure or figures. I'm not going to spoilerize it for people who haven't seen Psycho, but there's a twist, and it really leaves you with this fear.
Michael, thanks for your call. Okay, so Jane, this is where I need you to explain this a little bit to me, because as Aviva said, lots of people afraid to take a shower after Psycho. Lots of people afraid to go in the water after Jaws. A lot of people still afraid to go into the water this many years later, 50 years later. People afraid of birds. Does that not happen to you?
No, it does. It does a little bit, but that's part of the fun for me. I mean, I think that there's definitely maybe a certain disposition who that is fun for you. I think, if you go to see a horror movie in the theaters, in my experience, you will hear as much laughter as you will hear gasps and screams, because it's really fun to be in a big room in the dark with a bunch of other people all getting scared together.
So maybe that's helpful, as opposed to streaming it at home. If you hear someone else laugh, think, okay, it's not so bad.
It's not so bad. But sometimes, I also love to just sort of go to my room and turn all the lights off and watch a scary movie by myself. And I do get scared after in the middle of the night when I have to go to the bathroom and I'm thinking of the scary face that I just saw.
You can't put your foot on the floor because what's under the bed?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sort of jumping out of bed to make sure whatever's under there can't grab me. But I don't know. There's something, it's adrenaline. It's titillate. Like you're getting a physical bodily response to it that is similar to rock jumping. And there's something about that I think keeps drawing you back if you enjoy it.
We'll go to Kitsy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy. Go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. I'm 88 years old, and I'm the sole voice who's saying I have never in my life seen a horror movie.
Now, are you sure you haven't seen a horror movie, Kitsy? You've never seen anything that scared you?
No. Well, I've seen real-life stuff. I remember being taken by my babysitter when I think I was 5 or 6 years old, and she didn't know better, and it was black and white, and it was World War II was going on, and for the first time in my life, I just saw skeletons being thrown into ditches and just horrible things. And I think after that, I thought, I will grapple with any challenge today that is horrible, and I will do everything I can to put things right. But I'm listening to this because I'm always curious, Jen. You always have such great programs that I can always learn. So I'm learning from these people. I just don't understand. I'm trying to, but I don't understand.
Don't understand. Okay, millions and millions of people love horror films. For those who don't understand, Aviva, you want to explain it?
Sure. I mean, it's interesting because the caller has such a great point. If there's so many real horrors in the world, why turn to synthetic or fake horrors? For me, it's strange. It's almost like a refuge. I mean, I am very horrified by what's going on in the world at different times, obviously, but horror becomes a kind of, I often turn to a horror when I'm stressed out about what's going on in the real world. Because it's not, I mean, going back to our earlier discussion, it's not real in the same way, even though it can reference some of that real horror. But there's something very comforting to me, and maybe I'm a sicko, I don't know, but about looking at vampires and zombies and like things that are scary, but without making a huge impact or any impact on my everyday life. Whereas watching the news or even watching a more realistic film, a drama, a war film, for example, that horrifies me, right? That I cannot, like, it's too much. But horror really very rarely stresses me out. It, in fact, has a comforting value to
me. Comforting value. Okay, there you go, Kitsy. We got a bunch of emails about people's favorites. An email here from Scott. I like the campy ones, Stephen King's two creep show films, which contain several shorter tales. And he writes, thanks for the ride, lady. Maggie says she doesn't like slasher zombie films. Her favorite is Robert Wise's The Haunting. Mm-hmm. Shirley Jackson is a master. There is no explanation for The Haunting. So cool and scary. I see you all nodding. Mary says Black Cadillac is my favorite. I'm 80 years old. Melissa loves The Blair Witch Project and The Shuttered Room. So thank you all for sharing that. And here's an email from Frank. The horror movies that really messed me up for a while were Poltergeist and The Exorcist. Oh, yeah. I watched those movies when I was 12 years old, and I could not process them at that age. I slept with my door open and the hallway light on for the next 6 years, and I have not watched a supernatural film since. For me, for sure, supernatural horror films are a hard no. Okay, so Alan, I'm going to ask you this. Is there an age at which you might be a little too young to watch some horror films?
I watch them with my daughter, for sure. I don't know. I think, let's face it, like, kids are scared of things. And I think it's often, you know, what we think of as horror, like, for adults, is maybe too much for them. But there's a lot of children's stuff that's pretty scary. I mean, it's, you know, the Brothers Grimm, any sort of, like, fairy tale has, you know, these elements of death and horror. I think kids want access to that. They just don't, you know, I don't think they need to see, you know, the
Exorcist.
The Exorcist. But I think there's, like, a lot to be said for, like, exploring those scary feelings as a kid, you know?
Okay. Yeah, Aviva.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the questions I ask my horror students on the first day is, what did you watch as a child that still kind of scares you today? And one of the things that comes up a lot is the film Coraline, right? Which is an animated film. It's brilliant, but it's terrifying. And it's really just, I wouldn't call it a horror film per se, but for many, I think it kind of gives you a thirst for horror. And it kind of, again, your family is not who you think they are. There's a lot of, your house is not what you think it is. And so I think for a lot of students now or adults now, there's something as a kid that kind of made them either never want to see a horror again or intrigued them and want to continue.
Okay, we'll go to Torbert calling from York. Hi, Torbert, go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. The great sociologist Emil Durkheim posited that the basis for religion is fear of the human dead. And early science fiction came up, gave us the insight, monsters from the id, or the collective unconsciousness. And I believe that zombies have a visceral hold on us for both those reasons. And the best of the zombie movies is I Am Legend, starring Will Smith as a scientist who is the last survivor of a plague of zombies that ironically is set off by the curing of cancer, the virus that was able to cure cancer also unfortunately created a plague of zombies.
Aha.
And he is as noble and heroic, he and his dog, a German Shepherd, are as noble creations as you'll ever see on the screen. And it's in New York City, which is quite the setting.
Okay, Torbert, thank you so much. And Aviva, Torbert's brought up two things that would need to be mentioned, zombies and science. And these are recurring themes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I agree, I Am Legend is a great film. There was an earlier version of it called The Omega Man. And it's also based on a Richard Matheson story, a great science fiction slash horror writer. And yeah, zombies, I mean, the whole idea of zombies kind of defying categories, they're dead, but they're moving, right? They, and of course, George Romero's films really launched a fascination with zombies in the US, right? Starting with Night of the Living Dead in 1968, the same year as Rosemary's Baby, which is not about zombies, but I think those two films kind of mapped out the paths that horror would take. So, and Frankenstein, right? Again, the Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein, which just came out recently, is based on, you know, Mary Shelley's novel, which is really one of the first science fiction stories. So that is something that's always been wedded, sci-fi, horror, absolutely.
Well, we are talking about horror films on this Halloween on Maine Calling. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. So who of you like horror movies? And is there a certain type? Well, that's our topic today. We are talking today on Halloween about movies that scare us. With me, Alan Baldwin with Damnation Land, Jane Donahue with Maine Public Radio, and Aviva Briefel with Bowdoin College. Share your comments and questions. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram. And if you can get through, you can call 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Mike. How common is the theme of exacting revenge against bullies in the horror genre? I think it's important to remember that for many children over generations, everyday life can feel like a horror film. Chronic bullying in school or living with an abusive parent can inflict an enduring sense of dread in the most vulnerable time of life. Mike, thank you for that question. Of course, what just popped into my mind was Stephen King's Carrie. Mm-hmm. Alan, do you think that this is a theme?
There's definitely, I mean, the revenge theme is has a pretty wide scope in horror, for sure. There's some really challenging revenge movies that were from the 70s that are too much. But I think the idea, right, again, it's that idea of like sort of embracing the dark side, right? It's like, revenge is okay in a horror movie. You know, you can actually do what you're thinking about doing in a horror movie. I'm trying to think of a good one that has like revenge on bullies.
Well, there's another one, sorry to interrupt, but I was thinking Carrie, definitely. Yeah. And then there's great Swedish horror film called Let the Right One In.
Oh man, yeah.
Which is an amazing, just beautiful film about vampires, but also about the monsters of bullying, mm-hmm. right? Monsters of bullying and that is just, for me, such a great representation of like a kind of revenge fantasy against bullies, putting it within the realm of fantasy, not the real. And I think, yeah, Stephen King's Carrie. I mean, Stephen King, I think he said he wrote Carrie for anyone who had their glasses like thumbed in high school, mm-hmm. you know? So it is a kind of homage to those who have been bullied. Yeah.
We're going to go to Anthony, who's calling from West Gardner. Hi, Anthony. Go ahead.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I seen the first black and white and color horror film. And when they turned the bathtub faucet on, red blood came out of the bathtub, out of the faucet, and filled the bathtub up very slowly. And I was wondering, would you know the name of that movie?
Ooh, a good question for our panel.
I'm stumped on that one. It's a black and white, but went to color. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was the first color when color first came out. That was color red blood coming out of the faucet, bathtub faucet, filling the bathtub with red blood. It was back in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, Aviva?
No, I don't. I mean, there's a lot of like red bathtubs, bloody bathtubs in Carrie, obviously Psycho in black and white, mm-hmm. Had that very iconic image of blood in the shower. But I can't think of what that would be. That's fascinating.
Ooh, you know what? I was doing the same thing our producer Jonathan was doing, which was Googling. And we have an answer for you, Anthony. 1959, The Tingler And what the beginning of Wikipedia says, I know not the best source, but it says the film tells the story of a scientist who discovers a parasite in human beings called a tingler, which feeds on fear. So there we go, a movie for all of you to watch tonight. Anthony, thank you for your call. We'll move on to, let's see, Jay, who's calling from Buxton. Hi, Jay, go ahead.
Hey, great program, very informative. I was born in 66, and so I grew up through the 70s and 80s, and definitely very exposed to Hitchcock, but also a lot of Christopher Lee, a lot of Vincent Price, and then I would say Exorcist, Amityville Horror, Halloween, really sort of picked up the mantle, and it's just been interesting. It sort of follows a thread, various like the remakes of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, obviously, and obviously the original. I mean, it's interesting how some stuff sort of gets recycled around, and if it's done right, it's still really great.
Yeah.
And the Jordan Peele stuff, obviously, is pretty incredible, but it's, you know, it definitely mirrors the times for sure. And stylistically, it's interesting to see sort of how it gets spread out amongst people and, you know, Blair Witch, you know, the low budget aspect of that, or so it seemed. And, you know, just, it's interesting to see how it all sort of.
Yeah. So some films were, you know, sort of doing remakes and others trying to, like, whether it's Blair Witch or the Jordan Peele movies trying to do something brand new. Jay, thank you so much for your call. An email here from Jordan. Jeremy Kasten of Berwick, Maine, won the International Horror Film Competition several years ago with the film he wrote and directed, The Dead Ones. The founder of the competition announced publicly at the awards ceremony audience in Germany that it was the scariest movie I've ever seen. It's a movie that I will never watch because it's said to be so scary. Have you seen The Dead Ones, Alan?
I haven't, but Jeremy Kasten made a Damnation Land film for us, I think 2018, maybe? So I have not seen The Dead Ones, though.
Great. And I see Aviva taking notes. She's going to go watch it.
I'm going to watch it. I know.
We'll go to Heidi calling from Liberty. Hi, Heidi. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that if I don't normally watch movies, scary movies, but if I do, I have to watch it all the way through the end to make sure everyone's okay. And when The Exorcist first came out, my sister and I were driving by a drive-in, and that's what they were showing. So we pulled over and watched it without any audio. And then went back a week later to watch it with the audio.
Which was scarier?
Without the audio.
Scarier without the audio. There we go. Heidi, thanks for your call. I have to ask you, Alan, as a filmmaker, you know, special effects have come a long way, even in our lifetime. Has that made a big difference in horror films, or is it not really about the special effects?
I think, you know, special effects can add a lot, but, you know, really good horror movies, you know, making fake blood is pretty easy. It's, you know, a lot of times it's just chocolate, some chocolate sauce, some red dye, and some corn syrup. I think a lot of the films that I love have kind of mediocre special effects. Like, I think sometimes there's something about the campiness of, like, horror. And I think of, like, some of the Evil Dead movies, or even kind of the end of The Substance has that element of sort of, like, bad effects that are sort of appealing. I don't know what you guys think.
But. Shane's nodding.
Yeah, I love the more, like, bright red Technicolor the blood is, the better for me. So I love like a Cronenberg practical effects where it's like you can tell that it's not actually flesh and blood, but it's bright and vibrant and like wet and gooey and gross. I love, that's my favorite kind of gore.
Okay, we'll go to Josh. I'm learning so many things about my colleague, Jane Donahue. We're going to go to Josh, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Josh. Go ahead.
Hi. Fun show this morning. When I was a young boy around 1960 or so, the movie The Blob came out, and it just stuck with me. And I'm wondering if that's a known horror film where it might rate in the pantheon of horror films.
Well, we'll go to the professor for your answer, Aviva. Where does The Blob rate in the pantheon of horror films?
Not seen it for a long time, but I think it does. I mean, it's something that comes back, and that idea of like something that just is this in like undefinable mass that's just kind of taking over. There was another film called The Stuff, about this like yogurt that everyone ate, but it like would take you over from the inside, and it was like gross and just, so I think that that's the way, and people still remember The Blob even if they haven't seen it. It still has that kind of that attention to it.
That's funny you mentioned yogurt, because we have an email here from Samantha. My brother took me to see The Alien in the theater when I was 12. My mom was furious, as I could not drink milk for weeks. She said she loves horror and suspenseful horror the most. So, Josh, thanks for your call. And Samantha, thanks for that well-timed email. We'll go to Jen calling from Denmark. Hi, Jen. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a great show. In 1974, my best friend and I skipped school to go see The Exorcist in South Bend, Indiana, both raised Catholic. And we were completely traumatized. When we got outside, it was only like maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but the skies were completely pitch black. And what had been happening while we were inside the theater is one of the largest supercells, tornado supercells that had ever hit that part of the country had formed. And it ended up killing like over 35 people. And I was so scared as what I thought was a cool 15-year-old person. I asked my parents if I could sleep with them. And my mother inquired as to why. I told her, and she said, nope, you need your bed, you can lie in it.
Tough.
So that was my karma. And just as a footnote, Midsommar is my favorite horror movie ever.
Okay, Midsommar. Boy, I wanted to ask you all for recommendations, but I also want to get to as many calls as possible. Let's see, we'll go to Candia of Lisbon Falls. Hi, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Oh my gosh, you guys, back in the 50s, I was 8 or 9 years old, living in Lincoln, Nebraska, and my older brothers took me to see Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein. And I got to tell you, I had nightmares for a long, long time, looking under my bed, looking in my closet to make sure nobody was in there. And so that one was my first scare. And my number one, and still to this day, is a trauma when I watch it, is Rosemary's Baby, which you were talking about before the break. Ruth Gordon is fantastic. She is such a great actor. And just, I don't want to say anything about the baby or Rosemary's Baby. If nobody has seen it, go see Rosemary's Baby, the original Rosemary's Baby.
Jane.
I just have that. Just last night, I watched a different pregnancy horror movie that I would love to recommend. It's called Husera, or The Bone Woman. It's a Mexican horror movie.
How do you spell that?
Husera.
Okay.
And I think it came out in 2022, and it's about a young woman and going through her first pregnancy, and hijinks ensue. Things go awry. There's some really great body horror. And I thought it was a really cool, fun, fresh twist on like the pregnancy horror. So I would definitely just
recommend
plug that one. Yeah.
Okay, Aviva, what's your recommendation for maybe somebody who's listening and saying, I'll give this a try. I'll give the horror genre a try.
Oh, well, I already plugged Rosemary's Baby. I would also put it in a plug, and I know a lot of listeners have probably seen it, for the film It Follows from 2014. Which is a phenomenal film, also about dread and also about not knowing what around you is a danger to you. And it's just a really interesting meditation, I think, also on death and fear of death. So that's something I would definitely recommend.
Okay, your turn, Alan.
I think It Follows is a good example of something that, because I think a lot of people think about horror, they think blood, guts, and knives. There's a lot of horror that doesn't have that. I mean, I think It Follows is a really good example of something like that. I always think of, I think a lot of times I just recommend things like Poltergeist. I worked at a video store for years. And so there are a lot of people that kind of want something creepy, but they don't want the visceralness that I think a lot of people associate with horror. There's always some really soft recommendations like that. There's a great PG film I remember that we used to recommend all the time to families who wanted to watch a scary movie together. I think it was called Paper House. It's just a creepy movie. It's got a kid. It's about a family, but it's very accessible.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I'm going to apologize to everybody trying to call in who can't get through, because that would be the last comment of the hour. Thank you all. Alan Baldwin, filmmaker and co-founder of Damnation Land. Jane Donahue, my colleague, a Maine Public Radio operations announcer and producer, and Aviva Briefel, who is a professor of English and Cinema Studies at Bowdoin. She's co-editor of Horror After 9/11. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Our theme song, which you are not hearing right now, composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm reading too fast, and this is Maine Public Radio.